Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
66%
hooray. Yes.
As good as we usually get.
I am Richard Nicholas, hello. The other people who talked were Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And Anthony Evans.
Hi.
So guys, we're here to chat about a film, as we often do. And that film is The Delta Force. Ba 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 ba, patriotic rubbish keyboard music. Ba ba ba, how's it go?
Do 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 do. Something like that, I don't know.
I don't know, I think you can do it.
It's pretty epic,
though.
It was a bit. It does have the most epic theme tune, though, doesn't it?
In a kind of lame Casio keyboard way, yeah. Epic. Okay. Yeah, but The Delta Force, it was your choice, Anthony.
It was.
So you get the honour of reading out some details about it so that people know that we're definitely talking about the same thing. You know, the one, Chuck Norris, Lee Marvin, a plane. That one.
Well, you kind of already done it for me.
Yeah, but which people made this? We got to know who to praise slash blame.
Okay. Well, The Delta Force from 1986 was written, produced and directed by Menahem Golan with James Bruner also getting a writer's credit. And is loosely based on the real-life hijacking of Transworld Airline Flight 847 in 1985, where the flight was hijacked by Lebanese terrorists. The film stars Chuck Norris as Major Scott McCoy of the American anti-terrorist outfit, the Delta Force, whom are tasked with eliminating the terrorist threat and rescuing all the hostages. The film also stars Lee Marvin in his final film role, Robert Forster, Robert Vaughn, Martin Balsam, Shelley Winters, George Kennedy, as well as a whole host of others. And if you're particularly eagle-eyed, you might spot just the tiniest of uncredited cameos from Liam Neeson.
I didn't spot Liam Neeson, but I saw Chris Dillon.
To be fair, he's only on screen for about half a second. If you remember, he's towards the end, they have to like wire cut some fences, and he's the one doing that.
Ah.
He's the wire cutter.
He is.
The wire cutter itself.
One of the most efficient of wire cutters I think I've ever seen in film.
They did manage to snip very quickly and randomly and get through. And
well, there you go. That's the Delta Force.
And who was the other random spot, Abby?
Chris Dillon.
He does pull a funny face, though. He's got a kind of gormless look on his face when you spot him towards the end of the film.
Yeah, he's just sort of looking lost most of the time. Where I think he's on guard, but I don't know what he's guarding for or where it's coming from. So he just looks a bit confused.
I was a bit confused at that stage of the film, to be honest. Anthony, why did you pick this? And I guess also your expectations coming to the film.
Well, the first thing I was thinking of was that we haven't brought up Chuck Norris yet in the film bin. So it was well due time that he had to make an appearance here somewhere.
It's true, he has been festering inside the film bin for a long time now.
Many of his films fester in film bins across the land.
And I just felt this one just kind of fit in kind of perfectly with the film bin. I don't know, I just had a vague memory of it from childhood. And my one memory was Chuck Norris on a motorcycle with a rocket launcher coming out of it. And that was enough to make me look it up, and I watched it, and I thought, it'll go down well.
Hmm. It takes a long time to get to that payoff.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's a good reason to suggest it. I should say, we are not, any of us, big Chuck Norris experts. We haven't seen that many. I think we were talking before the show, and we've all seen about 3 Chuck Norris films each, including this one. Is that right, guys?
Yeah.
And, the Chuck Norris thing is interesting, and we'll talk about it. But first, Abby, what were you expecting?
Well, Chuck Norris was actually in a little bit of a precarious position for me, because he was one of those guys where I'd already watched a couple of movies, I was bored to death, and if this one was going to be boring too, then I cut him out. So
he's not bad in that Bruce Lee one.
He's barely in that Bruce Lee one.
He's a fight. He counts.
So yeah, I went into this still open-minded, but he was getting close to the guillotine.
Well, before we find if that guillotine came down and his beard somehow stopped the guillotine and threw it back up and somehow guillotined everyone else, I don't really understand Chuck Norris jokes. It seems like the punchline is just Chuck Norris is so hard and so much of a legend, he defies logic and science with manliness. That seems to be the gist of them.
Yep.
Do you guys know any Chuck Norris jokes?
Not the top of my head, no.
No, oh damn.
They all tend to just be a variation on a theme.
Well, it's just, you know, Chuck Norris defies logic is the thing. It's just like, Chuck Norris doesn't read books, books read him, or like stuff like that, isn't it? Like,
underneath, like, Chuck Norris's beard is a fist.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just everything is just, like, somehow the answer is Chuck Norris, and he is the be-all and end-all of everything, and just... They're kind of fun. It is kind of fun to come up with Chuck Norris jokes because it's just like, think of anything and then defy logic and go Chuck Norris. Like, Chuck Norris, if you spell his name in Scrabble, you win forever. That's the kind of joke that people come up with, isn't it? Like, Chuck Norris is so hard, he didn't build his house. The house built itself when he threatened it with his fist beard, you know? Like, I don't dislike Chuck Norris jokes. But I feel like they're slightly misplaced because he's not that. I could feel myself being punched through time, just threatening the idea of criticizing Chuck Norris. But I don't think he's all that.
His legend precedes him.
It does. Certainly.
And it's not all true as most legends are, I guess.
It's a nice way of
putting it. He's not the most electric of action movie heroes, shall we say.
Because people who like bad movies, specifically bad movies that are so good they're bad, I understand. I am one of those people often. I couldn't like the No Retreat, No Surrender films if that wasn't true. But for me, your Van Dammes, your Arnold Schwarzeneggers, they're the prime cheesy action movie hero guys. And, you know, I'm not as big a fan of a Chuck Norris one because I think the production is usually somehow cheaper and he's a little bit more inexplicable.
He's certainly one of the B-list action stars. I'd lump him in with, like, Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
But even Steven Seagal is kind of, like, just half a step above.
Well, he's only really a tree trunk with, like, a leather jacket stapled to it.
The same kind of electricity that Chuck Norris gives off.
Yeah, but that's I don't want to judge too harshly, because I've only, like I say, seen about three. You guys are the same. Maybe we haven't hit the gold. But this is one we tried, and the myth doesn't seem to, you know... he doesn't live up to the myth, is, you know, essentially what happens, of this a legend who will beat up you, your mother, and your sister before you're even born, or whatever, like he does with his ability, you know, to be Chuck Norris. And I don't know, it doesn't... I would rather attribute all of the Chuck Norris jokes to someone like Mr. T, who I have more respect for. But, you know, there isn't Mr. T jokes. I mean, there are Mr. T jokes, but they don't have the same amazing cultural phenomenon that Chuck Norris has created somehow by existing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know why they've latched onto Chuck Norris so much more than everyone else that exists.
Yeah, but sorry, Chuck Norris fans and Chuck Norris joke writers, you're hilarious. I've read some of your jokes and they are good. But we're not converted from this film. But let's talk about it and see why. So, guys, where to start, really? It's about a flight hijacking initially.
Yeah, well, I suppose I should give you a little background as to some of the film. Like, the Delta Force is an actual kind of American military kind of covert thing that actually exists.
Like, Black Ops, Blops.
Yeah, something like that, but kind of mainly focused on kind of anti-terrorist things. And this, like I said, this film is loosely based on a terrorist hijacking that actually happened in, like, the year before.
It's interesting. I didn't know that going in. I don't see why not. Initially, it's a very realistic film. It's very tense. It's all about, you know, passengers not knowing what to do and people coping with a very difficult situation. I mean, it's kind of interesting now that we live in a post 9/11 or 11/9, as we should call it in Britain, because, you know, we have the dates the other way. But it's different now that we live in a post 9/11 world. there's terrorists on a plane that conjures a lot more emotions from people, I think.
It is weird having that extra bit, sort of...
We are seeing it differently to how it would have originally been intended, I guess. Like, we're now, like, tainted slightly by terrorism, specifically on planes. And, I don't know, maybe some of the lightness of it has been dissipated over the years because of that. But in some parts, I think that helps to add a bit more tension to it.
Yeah, and off the back of... to stay in the movie world rather than to debate, you know, real-life events, there has been films about plane hijackings, and then specifically the ones that occurred on September the 11th. And it's kind of in the same genre of intense hijacking plane thing. And the first half of it, which is focused on that, is kind of good in that regard. Like, even though it's ahead of its time in that... You know, it was before these newer movies. Like, what are the movies they made off the back of September the 11th?
United 93, I think, is the main one.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there's another one as well. But it doesn't, you know, the point is, it was an interesting idea for a film, and it works quite well. I mean, they got that guy from Jackie Brown in it, playing a terrorist, and doing a really convincing job, because at first you're like, oh, that mustachioed man looks a bit like the guy from Jackie Brown, but... He's portraying some kind of Middle Eastern guy, and wait a minute, that is him. What the heck? What's going on?
Yeah, that's Robert Forster.
How do you guys react to him being in it, in the terrorist role?
Well, I didn't, honestly, I wasn't paying that much attention, so I didn't really notice it was him at first. I was just kind of happy that we've got, like, an actually kind of intimidating villain going on here, because I thought, like, coming into this, you know, you're thinking cheesy 80s American kind of fluff,
yeah,
with kind of mainly based around kind of like the martial arts of Chuck Norris,
yeah, and you know, we preemptively know there's going to be a bike with rockets on, so yeah. You know, and it also opens with an explosion of a helicopter and establishing that Chuck Norris's and Lee Marvin's Delta Force are, you know, soldiers and heroes, and like Chuck Norris, especially with his lacking the beard, just the mustache, is willing to run back to a burning helicopter and save his buddy, even though it seemingly was easy for everyone else to save him because the flames weren't quite as high as they'd suggested. He
wasn't quite as trapped as they suggested either.
That's my main problem with that. He was trapped next to an extremely large open door,
and everyone else was just like, "We can't get him."
Yeah, which was not the one that Chuck Norris went in through.
Yeah. Just
to me, this whole opening scene was... I understand why it's there, but it was also kind of pointless, really. It didn't really have anything else to do with the rest of the film, other than setting up that the Delta Force is something, and Chuck Norris is kind of associated with them, but maybe not anymore.
One of the things that detracted from this movie for me, which is a real shame, is that there were lots of things which I assume were put in for the sake of being factual and covering all the stuff that actually happened, because it's loosely based on real events, that just in filmic terms were completely unnecessary. Like, I don't know, I just felt like there were a few times when they just tended to cut away to see some folks for a bit, and they were doing something that was necessary to save the hostages, but not something that you needed to see as a viewer.
Well, we get to see lots of bits that are fairly mundane and just people, you know, doing their job. There's a lot in the first half of the movie of Delta Force just milling about, waiting for planes to turn up and missions to begin, and sitting about waiting. It's like, yeah, great action movie, guys. Really full of action with people milling about, waiting for people to turn up and just trying to catch up with the terrorists for so long. Like, it's kind of... Usually an action movie would have, I don't know, action in it?
Yeah, and that's kind of why I find the opening scene a bit... Okay, misleading then, if not pointless. Because it cuts from this intense action to essentially like a really well-paced thriller for an hour.
Yeah. And it's almost there to go, don't worry, guys, this is an action movie. When you think, oh my gosh, this has been really tense and intriguing and realistic, that we're going to slightly pepper the start with a bit of action, but it's really at the end where it goes, right, we've remembered we're an action movie, let's brawl in like all that, like people jumping, explosions on bikes and rockets going off and bad guys being killed in the hundreds and people jumping and shouting and shooting, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't help but feel by like the end of the film that Chuck Norris was a late addition to the film. And I kind of felt like all of the parts starring him were really unnecessary and kind of written in at the end.
They were the weakest parts, were all the parts with Chuck Norris in them.
And that's the thing about the film. Especially for me, anyway, I was coming in expecting a Chuck Norris film.
Mm.
And there is so little Chuck Norris in there. And all that's left is kind of him just turning up for the last 3 days of the shoot and just phoning it in a bit.
Let me just hold a gun. He seems very, like, trigger-happy. He wants to shoot that Uzi off at every scene he's in, and he just can't because it's not the time yet. And then it's like, let me go, and then I'll drive around a bit and wander about shooting people really blasé-ly. And, like, it doesn't even make it look like, you know, he's a soldier trying to kill people. He's just a man, a child man, holding a gun and going brap, brap, brap at the baddies, and they fall down.
Yeah,
it's not even convincing.
And another thing is, Chuck Norris is famous for his, like, his martial art skills, and that like only really pays off for 5 minutes. Well, not even 5 minutes, like 2 minutes at the end.
Yeah, it was when he finally kicked someone I remembered why Chuck Norris was famous.
Yeah, it is odd. And there are some good bits in the end, and we'll come back to the start, because I think the end is this kind of different beast to the start. It's almost a film of two sides. It's like interesting hijacking story that's tense and realistic, silly action movie rubbish. And the good bits for me are, I mean, he's got a rocket bike that somehow shoots rockets wherever he decides they're supposed to hit without him aiming in any way. And they go out the front and the back, so he can look like he's kind of farting the rockets out of his bum. But he also bursts through a window of a house on a motorcycle and gets a guy. And that was the coolest thing in the film. That I honestly liked that. So for all the bits that were kind of rubbish, That was cool. Do you guys agree?
I agree. It all culminated in that 3 minutes of film, which is what you were really wanting.
Mm.
Having said
and,
that,
and it was it, when it turned up, it was particularly badass.
Yeah, and more of that would have been good, or just keeping it straight all the time, keeping it about this tense situation where, you know, civilians deal with it and maybe stand up for themselves. And there was a compelling side that we'll talk about. But the Chuck Norris-y element could be good at times. But even then, it would do something cool, and then it would do something unnecessary, trying to be overly cool and being lame. Like, when he dispatches the bad guy at the end that he's drove off from everyone else to do, because he has to make sure that one guy is murdered or else, is he doesn't try and arrest him. He kind of fights him into a car.
Quite one-sidedly beats him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to, because you're talking about that bit, I also want to mention, that guy drove like 10 metres and then parked at that house. And Chuck Norris bothered to drive to that house to go and find him.
Also, there's just a random house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
With the TV on.
My dad was probably there 5 minutes ago and then left, leaving the TV on, as he always does. But yeah, he just kicks the guy into this car. And the guy happens to have an AK-47 or something handy in there. But Chuck Norris still drives off for some reason, doesn't arrest him, but gives him the opportunity to just be in this car. And then, yeah, you reach for the gun, mate. You reach for the gun, rocket, poof, ha, that'll teach you to terrorise people. I've somehow decided the best way to dispatch you is with my rocket bike after leaving you in the car. It just seems like, what are you doing? Arrest him or kill him, but don't do this scenario. This makes no sense. You had him. You beat him up. Arrest him. Or if you're particularly, you know, mean and Republican, kill him because, you know, he was a terrorist. Just, where's the protocol, guys? Where's the sense?
Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's like, at the beginning, Chuck Norris isn't even a part of the Delta Force, and he just kind of decides to turn up.
Yeah.
And be part of it.
I can't.
He's the guy who always comes
in. He's just the kind of rogue element amongst the Delta Force.
That's the weird thing. They just had this whole cutaway scene where he was eating, standing up, possibly in his house, but it did look like his kitchen went onto a garage.
I think it was like a cattle ranch. They looked like there was cattle in the background.
Ah, but still, I'm just listening to the news, eating, standing up in my kitchen and going, oh, this is terrible. I should do something.
Join
the Delta Force.
Yeah, but not only that, the Delta Force are waiting for him, even though they have no idea he's going to turn up.
Well, that's the thing, guys. He's a legend because, you know, they've all heard of him. He's like, even though he's not playing Chuck Norris the legend, he's playing a guy who's essentially Chuck Norris the legend. And they just know that he always turns up late for flights because he's probably saving a life or something. And that they keep doing that joke all the time. Not joke, but just bit where, no, we have to wait for 2 more minutes because he'll be here. He knows when to turn up. And they don't really need him because the Chuck Norris side of the... Anytime the Delta Force are used to stop the terrorists / murder them en masse for no reason, the Chuck Norris element is action movie-y and ridiculous, and everything seems to explode without really trying. And the side with Lee Marvin in is quite professional. They sort of stealthily do things. They kill guys with,
quietly.
What's the thing? The suppressors on, and people dropped and they move and they drop and they kill the people efficiently, quickly and quietly. Chuck Norris just blows everything up with bazookas.
Yeah, you definitely get the sense that they are like an elite covert team.
Yeah,
but Chuck Norris is just so rogue
and insane. They all just seem to. There's a bit where it stops being about stopping the initially 2 terrorists because they increase their ranks, but it's about blowing up as many of this massive army of people in this foreign country that it doesn't matter, they're foreigners, we must kill them all because they are associated with terrorists and have possibly got some, they've got some kidnapped people, so we're allowed to slaughter everyone without any reason. But, I do like buggies with guns on roaming about and people shooting at stuff, and, there's some cool buggy gun things and, bunch of scenes where people seem to shoot at Chuck Norris and he doesn't seem to mind. His car gets shot a bit, but they could just sit there happily drive away slowly.
With their futuristic blue lights for some reason.
Special lights for not being too luminescent but still on. Whatever. But there's some good stuff in the action movie bump. But that comes later, after an hour or so of a very different movie, which I think we should talk about because it's kind of the better half. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, the bit on the plane is excellent.
Essentially, our main baddie is, as we said, the guy from Jackie Brown. What did you say his name was?
Robert Forster.
He's a moustached terrorist who dresses as if, the devil was going to Miami. He has a sort of red shirt and white tie and white suit. And he has, a little henchman who's... he's just a sort of generic, hairy, Muslim-looking guy, isn't it? That's the idea.
Yeah, they're kind of like Forster's the kind of cool, calm, totally evil one, and then the other guy's the more kind of emotional, unhinged one. You have that kind of dichotomy between them, so they're extra scary together.
He has a implied backstory about possibly his family died, and that's why he hates the West, and has some kind of reasonable-ish motivation to become a terrorist. It's the usual sort of backstory to a kind of affronted Middle Eastern man who hates the West. It's kind of, it's one of those things where, is this stereotyping or is it just sort of representing an idea or a character? It's kind of, it's a bit weird when they turn up at the airport amongst everyone else. They look a bit like they're Middle Eastern and they're terrorists. Well, of course they were. That's what, people from the Middle East do, is hijack planes. And, it's kind of what you guys reckon?
Like we say, it is based on reality. So the terrorists were already decided before the film started, I guess.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is the kind of Hollywood stereotypical Muslim, Middle Eastern kind of terrorist thing.
Yeah.
It does tend to change sometimes. Sometimes there's the Irish kind of terrorists, and there was like a brief period of like American terrorists in films. But it's always the Middle Easterns that keep coming back.
It's either that or Russian or a ragtag compilation of all of the world so that there's no one getting the blame. And I think it's in this case, because it's based on truth, it doesn't matter that much that it's Middle Eastern men who look Middle Eastern. You know, it does, you know, whatever. Like, either way, we've got a couple of terrorists who have hijacked a plane with grenades and guns, and it's kind of, it's in that time where you could just smuggle grenades in the napkins. It was fine. It was just easy to smuggle grenades on. And it's, you know, that's it. That's how it was. That's how it was. No, everyone could get on planes with anything they wanted back in the day. That's why we live in a dangerous, terrorist-filled world today.
That's
indeed.
That didn't went where I expected it to go.
No, I mean, yes, people could smuggle things on a lot easier in the 1980s, it seems. But in the napkins is where they kept the grenades. They got grenades and guns on the plane. Oh, no, we're hijacking it. That's basically, you know, it. They don't even explain why they're hijacking the people very well in the film, do they?
Not really. Like, I think there are some like general conversations about being oppressed by Americans.
Mm.
But no, it doesn't really go that into depth why they're doing it.
Yeah, there's no moment where they like do the cliched thing of, I don't know, sending a message to the president or something. They just seem to want some hostages, which they for some reason had to kidnap off a plane instead of just in their own country. I don't know why they couldn't find some Westerners to hijack or what, like, I don't know. But they've got a plane full of like Westerners basically that they want so they can, I don't know, do bad guy stuff, negotiate or whatever with the Americans about, I don't know. But they kind of wanted to take them back to their country and keep them. But it doesn't really get to the point where they get surprisingly far away and succeed to some extent. It's only that Delta Force eventually catch up with them that they get into trouble. And by then, they're on their home turf, really. So it's just a bit whatever. They've got a bunch of hostages. They want them for naughty guy reasons. And, it's tense because they're not only just hijacking them, but they are slightly more racist than that because they want to, like the Nazis, segregate the Jews, or Israelis, and have them particularly to be secondary, more important hostages that they're going to take off the plane first and keep in a jail.
Yeah, it's not particularly clear what they're doing, but there is a kind of a horrible threat when they were like segregating the Jewish people.
Mm.
It's a very unsettling thing that was happening because they also had like the German air hostess who was refusing to help them and like, you know, kind of making it clear about the Nazi implications.
Yeah, it was a really compelling bit, really. I really thought the German air hostess is one of the best characters and actors in the piece. I thought she was very good. I thought it was a really good piece of cinema to have this dichotomy of, A, why are you separating the Jewish people out from the rest? Because, you know, Israel-Palestine issues. And to have it be a German air stewardess who has to pick out the passports who sound the most Jewish.
Yeah. And it's just like cruel, yeah.
And that kind of makes an intense cinematic moment. I thought that was kind of an interesting part of the film.
I was just going to say, yeah, I agree. And that I suppose we should give the actress a mention. Her name is Anna Scheigula, playing Ingrid. And, one of the better characters in the film. And she's actually based on a real air hostess who was on the flight.
Hmm.
Well, what I was going to say is, it was so good because it was played absolutely straight. They just were doing a really horrible thing like it wasn't a horrible thing, and that made it so much worse.
Yeah, and the film gave us like just enough nuggets of kind of emotional investment in the beginning with all the passengers that like you really feel quite bad when this is happening to them.
Yeah, they do that thing before everything goes awry. they show us a little bit of the dynamic between some of the passengers chatting to each other in the airport and on the plane, and they establish that there's like a couple of married Jewish people, there's like a priest, a couple of nuns, there's a Russian guy who's Catholic as well, and there's a few like families and people that are our focus of the cast. There's, you know, there's a whole plane full of people, but they're the ones who are going to come up, and it's because of later in the film they're going to highlight the people they deem as being Israeli in that they're Jewish, at least sounding. Because the Russian guy, they do a kind of cool thing with the Russian guy where he's called up because he sounds Jewish. And it's like, but I'm Catholic. The audience know this. Someone help me. Like, and it's like, no. Just sit down here in the front, in first class, with the GIs, the guys from the Navy who scuba'd up. The guys from the Navy, they scuba dive. We don't like them either because we're that kind of Middle Eastern guys who dislike the American Army, dislike Jews, and are nice to kids for some reason, and pregnant women. I don't know. It created a kind of interesting thing, trying to humanise them, where the slightly unhinged second terrorist got quite cross with people, and you know, he's threatening them with a gun and a grenade all the time, but at the same time wants to take care of the pregnant woman and the little girl he'll give the Cabbage Patch doll to and be nice and kind of talk to her in a reasonable way and just make us feel uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah, I thought that was a kind of like a bit of a cheesy move at the beginning, having like a kind of, oh, well, we've got the sympathetic one, so he's obviously going to be the kind of way in, you know.
Yeah.
He's a good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like his kind of him being nice to people just makes him more unhinged, because it makes him seem a lot more emotionally unstable.
Like, he's almost a reasonable guy and justified in his cause, but at the same time, he's still doing a ridiculous, hideous, evil thing. And, you know, it makes them more developed as characters, because they got this, like, cliched-looking baddie who's just in a suit and really confident. But they also have a slightly more man, like, a more regular man thing going on. And
yeah, I think I liked him because he was so hard to read. He wasn't... like I say, it leads you in one way and then it kind of takes you in another, and it's a little bit unexpected.
Mm. And it adds to the tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, and essentially they have this, you know, like cruel moment where the deemed Jewish have to go sit in the front of the plane, and even like they do the nice thing of going, like, other people who aren't Jewish don't like this, and also like a Catholic priest is going to say, look, I'm Jewish then, because you know, I'm as Jewish as Jesus was or whatever, because I'm a Catholic priest.
that was an odd moment. I didn't quite understand that one.
I think it's like it didn't quite make sense what he said.
Yeah,
but I did like that he was like, no, if you're going to persecute people for faith, then persecute all faith. It's like, don't discriminate.
And it's basically showing that the passengers of this plane, who kind of stick up for themselves a bit, they're very, like, torn up and not wanting to do what these guys want, and almost are on the cusp of fighting back or considering it a lot of the time. And there's a lot of high emotions and good acting from the people on the plane. But there was also a weird thing where the terrorists, when people are objecting and saying, look, I'm Jewish as well, then, if that's how you're going to treat us. And the terrorist is like, yes, fine, then you just sit there, just sit down. It doesn't matter that. It kind of, at that point, it's like, it doesn't matter if you're Jewish or not, we just need a few of you, like, to be separated. And I guess, one of the terrorists only found out there were Israelis on the flight because he happened to look in someone's bag that had, like that weird moment where they planted the wedding ring that has Israeli text on it. He finds it, goes, oh no, there's people we are just discriminate. There's people we discriminate against on the plane. We should make an example of them. Or something.
I think they were worried that the Israelis would fight against them specifically.
They have this weird racism where they presume a lot about other races and religions, and also gender. They seem to not be too worried about women fighting back. They're concerned, they want to get the men on the not to be near the aisle, I think, because they don't want them to, you know, start getting ideas and fighting back. But women obviously won't. Like, they have a kind of presumed sexism and presumed, like, racism, don't they? Like, it's kind of weird. But they're baddies, so it doesn't matter, you know? That they're expected to be nasty and horrible and have a lot of presumptions.
So yes, but, while like and while all this is going on, we get various shots of the Delta crew just kind of sleeping in their plane, waiting to get wherever they're going.
The guy from Hustle and Wild Bunch, what's his name, Abby?
Robert Vaughn.
Robert Vaughn is seemingly the guy who chats to the president about what Delta Force are going to do exactly and who, whether we're negotiating or not, is there to give the okay.
I'm sorry, Rich, but you had a touch of the John Snows when you said that. You went negotiating.
Negotiate with John Snow. Oh, John Snow. We don't negotiate with the wildlings. Sorry. Well, anyway, Robert Vaughn is in it briefly just to be buddies with Lee Marvin and go, you can go now. Like, it's fine. All the ladies, that's the nice thing, actually, is the women and children are let off. And it's kind of like, oh, it's nice, terrorist. You're literally going to let the women and children go because suddenly your sexism is paying off and you're releasing quite a lot of hostages just out of sheer, well, we want to negotiate. So women and children, they're innocent. They can go.
What would they have done if there were only, like, 5 guys on the plane?
I don't know. Pretty weird flight, generally.
It could happen.
I guess they would have just
picked.
They found another arbitrary way to divide and segregate everyone with like black tops. Come here. Like, we don't like people with black tops. You come in the front of the plane. Your hostage is A. You're the A team, and these guys are the Alpha team and the Beta team. See what I'm doing? I'm referencing Delta Force, Delta Team. Yeah. No, but they basically needed to separate the hostages out because I don't know, they wanted to drop some off in one location and keep the rest. That's the other thing I don't understand and I couldn't follow. They have a couple of pit stops, one to get fuel in a country that doesn't want to have them there, which adds some tension, but it's mainly just confusing. What was the deal with the country that was like, no, you can't land here, don't land here, don't bring your horrible hijacked plane here, we don't land, we won't let you.
Okay.
We're going to drive stuff on the thing.
Yeah, the first place they land is Lebanon, which is their home country.
Right.
And it is a little bit confusing as to what's going on, but I think the terrorists are in on it with the kind of military guys in Lebanon, so they kind of sneak on some terrorists for them at that point.
He has a chat with his brother in the military, doesn't he?
Yeah. And take off some of the Jewish, well, all of the Jewish hostages and take them off. And then their next flight is to Algiers.
Mm.
And I'm not sure why.
Because that's where the things they can afford to blow up are?
Yeah.
Like Abby said before, it's probably the case of, well, this is what actually happened, so we have to kind of get it in there somehow. But they didn't really explain why things were happening that way.
Yeah, and everyone ended up back in Beirut again at the end. So I don't understand why Algiers was there.
It just kind of loses focus because up till then, we understand why things are happening, or we're thinking we're going to, and then it's like, and now we've forgotten about the whole plane hijacking thing. We're more focused on a ground-based thing. Basically, the head terrorist is off driving around, meeting people, and sorting things out. And all of our hijacked victims are kind of not the focus anymore because we're in weird base camps and occupied buildings by the militia of the terrorist cells or whatever they're called. And it's all a bit, hang on, what happened to our hostage situation? You're suddenly free of that, and it's kind of once you've landed and you're on your home turf and stuff, shouldn't it be much harder for people to sort this out, or easier if anything for Delta Force to eventually infiltrate you? I mean, I don't know, they seem to have the pilots of the plane are still on the plane held hostage. There's like the initial group that were the assumed Jewish group are held hostage in Lebanon, and also we've moved a bit further on, and I kind of lost track where the rest of the flight were.
Yeah, so it is a little confusing like that. And this is kind of the point where the movie kind of breaks down and changes into something else. Like, the Delta Force infiltrate them in Algiers, in the airport in Algiers, and the film is setting up that they're getting this mission done, and they're going to covertly go in and save everyone. And it kind of feels like the crescendo of the film.
Mm.
It kind of feels like, oh, well, we've just entered the last third of the film, and it's not going to be long now. And then it just decides not to do that.
Yeah.
And then the film just kind of like loses all its pace.
It is very odd. It forgets what it had going and all the interesting part of the story. It's like, oh, we don't care about the lives of these passengers anymore. It's now all about generic-looking terrorists and Middle Eastern dudes, like, basically, like, being mean to a bunch of the people off the plane, keeping them in a room with, just loads and loads of guys holding guns, just because. And they introduce, like, a sort of covert element with the bearded priest guy is working for Delta Force or something.
Mm.
He's sort of knocking about in the terrorist camp, isn't he?
Yeah, it's like an Orthodox Christian spy, isn't there?
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty awesome.
There was a massive beard.
A lot of priests in this film.
Yeah.
More than I was expecting.
I did like the priest character, but he was just part of that whole wing of the movie that didn't really make any sense.
Mm.
He was there observing them, and then going to his confessional, and then whipping out his cool Mission Impossible style, oh, look, I have a hidden communicator, like, and I'm going to weirdly sing, chant things into it, and people will pass on coded messages. And he's just basically there to show Chuck Norris and the one other guy who's turned up on a flight to the area they're in now. And he's going, yes, follow me. I also have a crazy idea about you sneaking in via the sewers. How about that? Yeah, I guess. This seems to have come out of nowhere, but whatever. And it's all just like, why are we doing this now? Where is all this? This has nothing to do with, you know, what we're building up to. But I guess it'll do. It's there to crowbar in the action sequences and people shooting and cars getting shot and terrorists falling off balconies and blowing up and stuff.
Yeah, it is followed by a kind of lacklustery car chase through the streets of Tehran, I think it was.
There's like this rubbish van that only Chuck Norris and this other guy, they get chased by the terrorists in their like vehicles and get shot at a lot and should have been at least wanged or winged. I don't want to say wanged.
Both,
why not? But it's kind of implausible and it looks a bit lame as well, is the problem.
Mm. Lots of, it's very much, it was just the basic formula of turn the corner really fast, drive a bit, swerve, hit something like a big ball, like a big pile of melons or
yeah,
a bus stop. And it just seemed to be that like three or four times until they escaped.
Yeah, really cheap action movie, not a million miles away from like a kind of lackluster Bond moment. And it was just a bit weak. You know, it looks cool seeing guys on top of like military vehicles shooting guns, but it's mainly just like you say, but crashing into melons and like telephone booths and things. And then it's like, okay, we get away and we'll commandeer another vehicle and we'll have a mission where we all just basically shoot and blow up everyone we can.
And very indiscriminately as well.
But it's okay because they stuck American flag patches on their arms. So they're Americans and everyone else is Johnny Foreigner, so shoot to kill. But they do look kind of badass on all of their bikes and stuff and little, like, there's a lot of coolness. And there's something cool about seeing all of these guys in black uniforms and rope sashes on them, like turning up and just absolutely taking care of business, although it is slightly cheesy looking and whatnot. A few guys scuba diving through the sewers and all that, and I thought it was doing better when it had, earlier on, like there was kind of a point where they stopped for fuel and Delta Force have caught up and they potentially are waiting for the go-ahead to go in and stop the two terrorists that are supposed to be on the plane. But unfortunately it gets cancelled because they've let on more terrorists now. And just at the last minute, Lee Marvin finds out from the German released hostage woman that there are more terrorists than they thought on there, so they cancel it, but it does jeopardise the mission a bit and it causes someone to be killed. Like, the one guy that is killed by the terrorists, essentially. Like, what do you guys make of that?
Yeah, he gets a particularly rough ride.
He does.
Up until he gets, like, killed. I think this film contains the the only ever scene I've seen in a film where someone is beaten with the arm of a chair.
Yes, that's good. That's an odd beating. I think that's a tick box. That's a sort of mafia style, use an object from the room style beating.
Yeah, and he's just the one that just gets beat on constantly, and then he's killed. And it's just a bit like, oh.
He's even beaten up over the radio.
It's a bit harsh.
Yeah. He's like beaten up over the radio to demonstrate that they're serious. And he's the only one the terrorists actually execute. There's like two deaths, isn't there? One is one of the hostages he's killed. And to demonstrate that you should... like, because they realise Delta Force are there because Liam Arvin has to like put a siren on and make their presence known so that no one invades and gets killed. Like, trying to stop the terrorists. But that's when they go, oh, we're going to show you we're serious and kill one of our hostages, even though we've released loads, we're going to kill one. And then later on, they manage to kill, like, one of the Delta Force team. And it's not even a nice guy. It's one of the Delta Force team that's kind of obnoxious.
Although it is, like, the guy from the beginning scene that Chuck Norris saves and his kind of, like, his best friend. even though, like, Chuck Norris shows no emotion towards him whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the guy has no character.
Yeah. Chuck Norris's friend who got killed. I found him particularly repellent because he was killing the most indiscriminately of all. He was just going into rooms. And he was endangering hostages as well because one of the guys that he shot, he was shot so violently that he misfired his weapon that could have killed a bunch of people.
He was an awful like member of the team. He kind of... they're better off without him, really. So, and the annoying thing is at the end they tried to make a really prescient, poignant moment where... all the people are saved, but still, you know, the soldiers here, they've lost a guy, so that's sad, you know? Like, even though we're heroes, one of us has died. Oh, sad. It's like, you killed so many of their guys. So many terrorists died, and they killed two Americans. Two people, two good guys were killed. One innocent, one, like, you know, special forces guy. And it's just like... I can't help but feel you murdered far too many people than you should have. That can't be the way to do things.
I know the bit at the end that you're talking about, and I thought it was fairly effective. I liked the kind of contrast between the hostages being elated and then the Delta Force just kind of quietly and solemnly going off, like, you know, the background people that you don't think about. But then... the end is just a cut to the theme again, and the theme is so like 80s pop-tastic that it's just too jarring with what they were trying to do.
It would have worked if the movie had kept up the tone of the start, like this kind of harrowing story of a hijacked plane, and it would have been okay. Like, yeah, they saved most of the hostages, but they lost a guy, and it would have worked, but... there's a whole, like, 20 minutes of Chuck Norris on a bike that fires rockets, killing people and blowing up vehicles and doing cool stunts. So it's like, you don't get to play the, oh, isn't it sad when one guy dies card, because you just killed people indiscriminately and pulled a jib and just shot rockets and went, yeah, and said, you know, kind of cheesy one-liner at one point. You're like, that doesn't go with your somber, poignant ending. You just can't have that.
And the one-liners they did use were particularly atrocious as well.
Yes. There was one with a bed or something?
Yeah, I think like some guy was hiding under a bed and then the thing is, sleep tight, sucker.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really work because he was hiding under the bed.
He should have said something like, I knew there was a monster under the bed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And also, Chuck Norris is not all that cool when he's doing stuff, because there's one scene where he's on the motorbike trying to catch up with a truck with some terrorists getting away, and the two GIs, or not GIs, just the Navy guys are in the back, and he basically saves them slowly, but they basically help themselves get out, climb on the truck, more or less take over the job of stopping it, while he's just faffing about with the driver and stuff, and being really ineffectual, and like, it's just... he doesn't do that good a job ever. He just sort of awkwardly struggles while the other guys succeed at what they're doing. So he's not even a compelling on-screen hero because he's not all that good. Apart from his rocket bike is cool. If ridiculous.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Like, I just don't remember any one of the Chuck Norris action scenes being all that, like awesome, but in a sort of, if a child was playing with toys awesome, not in a, you've succeeded to execute this brilliantly in an awesome movie way.
Yeah, even like the last scene of him fighting the bad guy, it's just a bit revenge-y.
Like it's somehow personal, even though Norris isn't personally tied to anyone.
Yeah.
It is odd. It was just too cold.
As
a thing.
And it's trying to be really patriotic and, the Americans have come and have saved the Americans from the horrible foreigners. And let's drive them and save them and get to the plane again. Like, okay, I guess this is an okay climax, if you want. And they just kind of wrap it up in the end with, right, there's one last bit of the mission. Lee Marvin is going to do a little bit of shooting. It's all very professional suddenly because he's come from a cotton field and they cut through one fence and then shot a bunch of guys.
Liam Neeson cuts that fence.
And good job, Liam Neeson. But that bit, again, it becomes professional, which is what annoys me. I was expecting a kind of cold, well-calculated, well-executed manoeuvre from these guys. And Chuck Norris has been ridiculous, and Lee Marvin does it really well with his guys. And they get back on the same plane that's been hijacked and fly away with all the saved hostages on. It's kind of the climax.
There's another bit here, actually, that doesn't work filmically, but was how it went down, so they couldn't really change it. And there was one guy on the plane. They got him to come outside, and they shot him.
Ah. Well, yeah. And then he goes to fall down the stairs, and hooray. But also, I'd forgotten another bit. And if getting away in the plane wasn't, acceptable enough, Chuck Norris is late again for the plane. And this time he's going to get on by pulling cool wheelies on his bike and then eventually grabbing a rope and dangling in and climbing up into the doorway just to be extra action movie because, we forgot most of it during the film. So that, sort of cool, but also kind of like from the imagination of a 13-year-old. So it can't really be this true representation of something that happened in real life. And it can't have both slices of cake and eat them both is the problem, I would say.
And here's the thing, the first half of the film is the most based in reality. And then the rescue part is fictionalized, so all of that is all of that is written
and you can tell
someone else, and you can tell, you really can.
I think we've pretty much got to the crux of it there.
Yeah, it's a movie of two parts: one tense action thriller, the other ridiculous and possibly enjoyable action movie. I mean, when a guy smashes through a window on a bike and kills terrorists, that's cool. That's kind of, it's a little bit Team America, World Police. And there's two good movies here, but they need to be separated into cheesy B-movie with Chuck Norris and harrowing tale with Lee Marvin, coming to the rescue and saving a bunch of hijacked civilians.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself.
So, Where do we end in terms of conclusions and rating system? Do we need a force? Do we need a Chuck Norris joke that symbolizes the movie? What do you guys think?
I have a force. I don't know enough about Chuck Norris to do something about him, I don't think.
Okay.
There is a type of action figure that has flex force. And it's just basically either their arm or their leg moves a bit. And that's
what they have one button at the back that just kind of makes their arm go up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie is. It gives you the impression that it's going to be very, very good because it starts off well, but then you realize that its movement is limited and quite impractical.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
So we're going with forces, different kinds of forces. I can't help but struggle to think of one to sum up my feelings. The two opposing forces, like magnets, like there's a south and a north, and they're pulling in separate ways. And there's, you see what I'm saying? There's two forces at loggerheads that can never win. Magnets, it's like magnetic force.
It's like two opposing magnets.
plus, minus.
You can try and push them together as much as you like, but they will never touch. Or if they do touch, you've had to apply so much force if you hurt yourself.
Yeah, that's it. That works, right?
Yes, that works really well, actually. I don't think I can do any better than that. Forces? No, I'm just going to give up and say, yeah, magnetic forces, Rich. Perfect.
Oh, Chuck Norris wouldn't give up. He'd come up with a metaphor. He wouldn't come up with a metaphor. He'd do something insane and impossible, like...
The metaphor would come up with him.
Yeah. Chuck Norris was there when the first metaphor was made, and it was him. I just thought, there's just a thing for you have to say something totally insane. So, oh yeah, Chuck Norris, he's like cuts a knife with hot butter, like that kind of nonsense, isn't it? Like it's literally like that. Like those are the kind of ones I can remember of the Chuck Norris facts or whatever they call them. It's just like just say anything. It just doesn't make sense, and it's because Chuck Norris is amazing. And in this case, he's not amazing. It's if Chuck Norris doesn't make good movies, he makes bad movies and should not be watched any further.
Or makes good movies bad by injecting him in inappropriately.
We'll get something to work. We're nearly there, aren't we, with a Chuck Norris joke to sum up this film. We'll keep trying.
Chuck Norris doesn't make good movies. Good movies make Chuck Norris redundant.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. That's a new Chuck Norris fact. Like, we should start a rival like meme or website. Just Chuck Norris facts that slam Chuck Norris instead of endorsing him as being this kind of impossible legend and god. We shouldn't, because there's a lot of Chuck Norris fans. I don't mean to offend Chuck Norris fans. I'm sure they're very burly and hard and like punching things. So I don't want to be a victim of Chuck Norris lovers. And I'm sure he's brilliant in other things. But in this, he needed to have the movie to himself, and we didn't need all that build-up. If they'd have just shifted the hijacking plane out of the way and made room for Chuck Norris, we might have had some fun. But as it was, I think I would have rather have watched the intense hostage thing, you know? Mm. Yeah. Oh, well. I think that'll conclude our episode, though, right, guys?
Yeah, I think that might do itself off quite nicely.
And I'm going to hide in a bunker in case any Chuck Norris fans or Chuck Norris himself comes to find me. Oh no, he's already found me, because that's how Chuck Norris does things. He already impossibly knows that we've posted it, even though we haven't yet, and is beating me up. Ow.
Bye, Rich.
Bye.
Sure that made sense in some universe. Now, if only we had the energy to get the music that plays out the end of the film, because it is just kind of the right sort of upbeat, silly music to finish off an action movie.
I didn't mention how there were really inappropriate moments where they used the music, and not because it was over something that was sad, but just sort of, oh yeah, he's just sitting in a chair. It's like, what? Yeah.
Wait, there what? Were lots of pedestrian moments where it's just guys doing their in-between work, waiting about, sorting their stuff out, preparing to do something but not getting to do it, crucially.
Just chilling.
Yeah, I'm just looking over my notes now, and there's only like two things on here that I didn't bring up. One of them was just him doing the hand zip line.
For no reason, just to show off like it's some kind of section of like Krypton Factor or whatever.
Yeah. Plus, you know, wouldn't I just, like, burn his hand off? I don't know.
There was no reason for it.
And the other point I probably should have brought up was the pointlessly long captions they always popped up.
That just made it worse. I think I would rather have guessed where they were than have known.
Yeah, and most of the time you really didn't need to know. It cuts back to the Delta Force in a plane. And it's like, well, we don't really need to know they're above the Atlantic. We can see they're in a plane. I mean, but it wasn't just that. It was like, you know, stuff like near the center of town, Tehran, like Monday the 13th of July. And it's just like, you know, you might as well put like the temperature up, the weather conditions. It's like it was so ridiculous.
And it didn't help contextualize anything, because we still didn't quite know why and where they were.
Overload.
It just, I don't know. It's very weird. Very odd.
Okay.
All right. Ta-ta.
Bye.
See you guys. Bye.